Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And happy 666, my friends. Welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program on the sixth day of the sixth month of 2006. Here in Oregon, they actually shut down a school district because they had concerns that the Satan-worshipping kids were going to be blowing up the school or shooting it up or some such thing. All sorts of strange stuff. Excuse me. And, who knows? It's got some folks spooked. I think mostly kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's got a few folks spooked. But the interesting thing about it all, frankly, about the whole thing with 666 and is the symbology of it. I mean, there's some really fascinating symbology relating to this whole thing. The people who created this country, founded this country, were very big on symbols and symbology. They really understood it. I mean, they were Masons by and large, and very into and understood all that stuff. But you have to wonder about the modern day Republican Party, or maybe not. I mean, there have been a lot of political movements in history that have been very into symbology, for example. I mean, the Nazis, they actually took a symbol from the Buddhists in order to do their thing, have their thing. But with regard to the Republican symbology, this is really and truly strange. If you go to, hang on just a second here, let me find the exact thing. Yeah. If you go to Google and you put in quotes, upside down star, just those three words, upside down star, in quotes, quote, upside down star. And one of the very first links that pops up, in fact, the first link that pops up is from crossroads.to. And it's called Pentagrams and Pentacles. And if you go to that website, what you get is a story about the pentagram being the right, the star being right side up, right, with a star with the head at the top and the tail at the bottom, sort of thing. And that's the traditional star, that's five-pointed star. That's a traditional sign of nature. It's used by Wiccans. It's white magic. It's a good symbol. That's the star that you find on the U.S. flag. That's the star you find in U.S. symbology. United States is the star where it's a five-pointed star. So you've got two legs down at the bottom, right, just like two legs in a person. You've got two arms going out left or right, the two star points, and then you got one star point at the top symbolizing a head. It's a person, essentially, the five-pointed star. And it's got a long history as a positive symbol. It's also, oddly enough, the symbol for the number six, the star, the five-pointed star. Go figure, but it is. But when you flip it upside down, it becomes something other than a pentacle. Then it becomes the pentagram. And, to quote from this website, dangerous, dangerous stuff. Right. It's, even the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, in discussing the ritual of the pentagram, the upright version, warns against making the mistake of employing the upside-down star. See that thou shalt not do it. Italics in the original. No wonder Helena Blavatsky, Madame Blavatsky, mother of the New Age, wrote in her book Studies on Occultism, there are secrets that kill in the arcana of occultism. It may seem strange that prominent occultists and occult societies would sound caution when using certain symbols, but understand, these men and women have seen and experienced powerful supernatural forces. This is what I think. So they go through this whole thing. When you turn the star upside down, then it becomes the goat's head. Right? Now you've got the two legs of the star at the top. I realize this is all weird stuff, but I'm going someplace with this that you're going to find really interesting. Now you have the two legs at the top, which are the two horns from the goat, and the one star going down at the bottom, that's the chin of the goat, and then the two going off to the side are the ears of the goat. So if you flip the star upside down so that the legs are up and the head is down, now it's the sign of Satan. Now, to pull all this together on this 666 day, this your official everything you know is wrong, everything you know is very wrong, yes, day. Okay, here we go. To flip this thing, to take this totally, totally to the end, if you're on the Internet and you have the ability to do this, go to www.gop.org. I kid you not, www.gop, as in Grand Old Party, as in Republican, .org. And on that page, there's a few little GOP symbols. Now, the problem is they're too small. They have three stars on them. In fact, you can see one right up at the top. But unless you have a magnifying glass, it's kind of hard to figure out exactly what. But if you look over on the right-hand side of the page, there's two little banner ads, and the second one says GOP en Español. And I've looked all over the GOP website, and this is where the best large logo is. So if you click on the GOP in Spanish, GOP en Español site, it takes you to a page that has down toward the bottom a fairly large Republican logo. The Republican elephant with the red on the bottom and the blue on the top and the three upside down stars. The three upside down stars. Not the stars of the American flag. The stars of Satan. And the upside down star being the symbol for six. And there's three of them on the Republican elephant. It's a 666. So, the next time you run across somebody who is like really into this, into the whole Revelation thing, you know, and the name of the beast, and you know, the third angel is going to put the mark on the forehead, Revelation 14:9, and all that stuff. The next time you run across somebody who's really into that, and just show them the logo for the Republican Party, and check it out. I think you'll find it interesting. It's just kind of our weird note for the day. It's election day throughout the United States. Katie in Bakersfield, California, on the line. Hey, Katie, how are the elections going in California?
Well, I just went to my polling center and was turned away.
You're kidding?
What happened?
Where was your polling center?
In Bakersfield, California.
And do you mind my asking what part of Bakersfield or
downtown? Downtown.
Okay. And why did they turn you away?
Oh, the die bulb machines aren't working.
You're kidding.
No.
So what about... Go ahead.
I heard a couple of the people working there saying that they weren't registering the votes.
Interesting. I wonder if it's...
It's on the local news here, but I haven't seen it on the Internet yet.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like, you know, it was in Florida and Texas and Ohio where they register votes for Republicans but not for Democrats, or they're just not registering any votes at all.
No votes at all.
Interesting. Well, did they offer you a provisional ballot? An absentee ballot?
I'm going to come back in 2 hours because the line was so long. So I'm going to go back in 2 hours and see what happens.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Now, is this a part of town that is predominantly Republican, predominantly Democratic, or do you figure it's probably pretty much 50-50?
No, most of Kern County is probably very red.
Uh-huh. So
I'm pretty isolated.
Yeah, so this is probably not so much a conspiracy to prevent Democrats from voting as it is just another example of why we shouldn't turn our voting processes over to a private for-profit corporation.
Exactly. None of the machines are working at the polling center, so, yeah, they just don't work.
Interesting.
And when they do work, they don't work for people.
Interesting. Katie, thanks a lot for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you,
Tom. And give us a call back in a couple hours. Let us know. By the way, I'll be doing the majority report tonight, so we continue to follow this story throughout the day. Good talking to you. I appreciate it. Amy in San Diego, California. Hey, Amy, we have about a minute before we have to take a break. What's up?
Okay, I just wanted to say that I went to that GOP website and clicked on Espanol, and it bounces you right out of the Internet. They must have taken it down.
You're kidding.
No, you can't get to it, or at least I can't, and I tried like three or four times.
Oh, okay. I can tell you what happened, because I got to it, and the same thing happened to Heidi, my co-host on the morning show, and she's working on a computer that doesn't have Flash installed on it. It takes you to a page in Spanish that plays a little Flash movie where the president is speaking to you in Spanish, and you know, it's all about, you know, how... In fact, I'm looking at it right now. Discurso del Presidente a la Nación sobre la Reforma Inmigratoria. If I'm, forgive my bad Spanish. I'll try it again. Yeah.
But so, you know, I'm in California too, obviously, San Diego. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to tell you that Pearl just said that her machine that wasn't working. I was able to vote this morning, but and we had the optical Diebold scanner, so I had a paper ballot, mm-hmm. but the scanner's broken. And so he said, oh, just put it in this box. It's just a cardboard box with no seal or anything on it.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, my. It doesn't say waste management on the outside or anything like that. Okay, who knows? Amy in San Diego, thank you very much, Amy.
Okay,
great to hear from you. It's 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. It's 666. It's Election Day. A lot going on. We'll be back with your calls and more right after this.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the guy from the GOP.
I've been around for a long, long year. So many a man.
The one with the upside-down stars.
I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain.
And you're still talking about him, aren't you?
Me damn sure the pilot washed his hands and sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name.
And welcome back. 22 minutes past the hour. Well, you know, I suppose you can push that just so long, you know. But it does absolutely weird me out. I have to tell you, because I know how seriously in American history symbols played a role in this country. You want to know about that? Just look at the back of a dollar bill. I mean, symbols are like really important things. And historically, there's been a lot of very significant symbology in the United States. And, well, for example, if you look at the stars on the back of a dollar bill, that are above the eagle. There's 13 stars above the eagle. And they are all right side up. None of them are upside down. I mean, the federal government simply would not put upside down stars on things. The founders wouldn't have tolerated it. I remember, you know, one time I was in Washington, D.C., and I was visiting actually the Heritage Foundation. I was debating some conservatives there. And one of the people at the Heritage Foundation took me on a tour of the place, and we went up on the roof where they're building a TV, not a studio, but a place where they can, on a nice day, they can shoot outside. And we were standing on the roof of the Heritage Foundation, and she pointed over to the PR person there. She pointed over to the Capitol Dome, and she said, you can see the Capitol Dome there. And I said, you see that statue on top of the Capitol Dome? And she says, yeah. I says, you know who that is? And she said, no. And it's a 19.5-foot tall statue that was designed back in the time of the founding of the country, but really wasn't put there for another 30 years or so. And it is the goddess that was created for America. The founders thought, okay, there's all these male gods in Christianity, but we're basing this on democracy, on Athenian democracy, on Greek democracy, and the Greeks had goddesses as well as gods, and America should have a goddess as well as the male gods that came along with Christianity and whatnot. And so they came up with this goddess for America, and her name was Columbia, named after Christopher Columbus. They feminized his name. And they create, and there's all kinds of different versions of her that you find in early American history. You find the goddess Columbia holding the scales of justice. You find the goddess of, and you'll find, she's the statue that John Ashcroft wanted to cover up her breast in the Justice Department. You find the goddess Columbia holding wheat in one hand, the goddess of fertility. But see, they rolled all these various goddesses into one, into Columbia. You find Columbia holding a shield and a sword. The goddess of war. You find all these different versions of her, and there she is on top of the Capitol building. And in fact, they thought that she was so sacred and her area was so sacred that they gave her a district, a piece of land that was just for the goddess, and people who lived there had a sacred trust to the country. So sacred that they couldn't even engage directly in the political process. That is to say, they could not vote. They did not have the right to vote if they lived in the district of Columbia, of the goddess. And to this day, people who live in the District of Columbia do not have representation in the House of Representatives or the Senate. They have an observer. And so you can imagine, you know, I remember, four years ago, first year of the Bush administration, as I recall. And I got up one morning and went out and got the newspaper and brought it in and opened it up. And there, in the headline, this giant headline, it said, Columbia dies over Texas. And the first thought that came to my mind was, George W. Bush has killed the goddess. And then I looked down and saw the picture of the space shuttle Columbia falling apart over Texas. And I thought, man, the symbolism of this. And so, you know, in a country that is so rich in symbols and symbology, you have to wonder why the Republican Party would flip the American star upside down and turn it from the symbol for human life, the symbol of man, you know, the Leonardo da Vinci's symbol with the legs sticking out and the arms sticking out and the head up. So you've got the point of the star at the top, the symbol of human life. Why they would flip that upside down and turn it into the symbol of the goat with the two horns going up and the chin going down and then put that on their official logo? Is it like they're trying to push something in our faces? I don't know. Sheila in Littleton, Colorado. Hey, Sheila, we only have about 30 seconds before I have to take a break. You know something about upside-down stars I don't know?
I think you just said it. The two upper points represent the horns. The two lateral points are the ears, and the downward point is the beard of the goat.
Right, which is the satanic goat.
Yeah, I learned that in a training class for police and paramedics one time.
Really?
Yeah, they were telling us about ritualistic crime and what to watch out for.
Ah, and so if you see that upside-down star in a ritualistic crime, you know that you're dealing with Satan worshippers.
Exactly.
And I'm telling you, go to GOP.com or GOP.org, the Republican website. The official Republican logo is upside-down stars.
Yeah.
It is totally weird. Sheila, thank you for the call. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We'll be right back.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Great to meet you. Hope you get my name.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Talk radio for the rest of us. One of our listeners points out to me, he says, those people on that website are wrong. The star with the pointed down is the symbol of masculine, while the star with the pointed up is the symbol of feminine. The transformation of the star from masculine to feminine to the sign of the goat to the sign of the devil was created as a means to destroy the religions of the Celts and other cultures of the Roman Church, and that they wanted gone because they were going after their resources, typical empire mentality. Yeah, interesting point, Chad. Thank you for the email. It's sort of like, but yet you have to consider the contemporary meaning. It's sort of like the Nazis took one of the classic Buddhist symbols for one of the genders. I believe it was the symbol for the feminine, reversed it, which was the symbol for the masculine, and then turned it into the symbol for Nazism. So the fact that the Catholic Church historically might have taken the star, a five-pointed star, and flipped it upside down and said, okay, that's the sign of the devil, doesn't mean that there aren't people today who don't think that that's the sign of the devil. Anyhow, John Berlau is with us. He's with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and this is probably totally baffling you, John. It's the topic of the previous half hour. Welcome to our program.
Thank you, Tom. No, I actually find it fascinating.
Well, what's fascinating about it is that the stars, the five-pointed star, is right side up. You know, it's Leonardo da Vinci's star. You know, the head at the top, the two arms sticking out, and the two legs sticking down on the flag and on all symbols of the United States. But on the GOP logo, it's upside down.
Wow.
And that's,
yeah, that, it is. interesting the way symbols can be used.
Yeah, it really is. So anyway, but that's not what we're going to talk about here. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Today, on this day in history, 1934, Franklin Roosevelt signed the Securities Exchange Act, which was designed to stop or to prevent another 1929-style crash by putting specific controls into place to control business abuses of secrecy, to control, well, just a whole series of things, curbing stock purchases by cash-strapped traders, control inside trading, things like that. And the Securities and Exchange Act has gone through a whole lot of permutations and variations, and other laws have been passed since then, including most recently Sarbanes-Oxley. And you've written for the Competitive Enterprise Institute an op-ed piece that essentially suggests that Sarbanes-Oxley is an inappropriate interference in business in America. Am I characterizing that accurately, John?
Yes. Thank you. And the securities laws you mentioned, they had always been pretty much, with some exceptions, until Sarbanes-Oxley disclosure laws, saying that investors should be able to take risk as long as there's adequate disclosure, and there's debate about what adequate disclosure is. But Sarbanes-Oxley has sort of gone beyond disclosure and mandated certain internal controls. You have auditors, accounting firms, who are the big winners from this, looking over companies' shoulders, small and large, and telling them, you know, what kind of technology they need, how many letters are in the employee password. So it's really micromanaging and tries to kind of tries risk rather than, you know, having the adequate disclosure to investors that previous securities laws had.
Well, the collapse of Enron and WorldCom and MCI and other companies, which Sarbanes-Oxley had nothing to do with. I mean, it came along after that. But the collapse of these companies is a consequence of these shoddy or illegal, now illegal, accounting practices, and perhaps even then illegal accounting practices.
Well,
didn't just take down the stock market. I mean, it wiped out literally billions of dollars vanished into thin air, because, you know, as stock goes up in price, you're essentially creating money out of thin air. And vanishing into thin air along with it went the pensions, the futures of literally, well, at least a million Americans. I mean, shouldn't we protect people like that?
Yes, government certainly should go after fraud. And the thing was, as you mentioned, Sarbanes had nothing to do with Enron, and also had nothing to do with Enron's conviction, since they were tried on the pre-existing securities fraud law. And one of the things that's ironic about Sarbanes-Oxley is that the accountants who this is supposed to go after are now turning out to be the big winners. KPMG is upping its college recruitment by about 40%, and Deloitte and Touche and PricewaterhouseCoopers are taking out op-eds and advertisements defending the law.
Sure, but you don't really think that those companies, I mean, let's say that the accounting industry makes $30 million as a result of Sarbanes-Oxley, which I would guess is probably generous, but let's toss a high number in there. $30 million bucks. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of accountants billing a lot of time.
Great.
We know that just Enron itself going down pulled out about $5 billion from our economy. Isn't it reasonable to ask private industry to spend $30 million to save folks like you and I, who are small investors, from having our life savings wiped out to the tune of $5 billion?
Well, actually, the American Electronics Association had calculated that it actually cost 30 businesses $35 billion a year. And
Sarbanes-Oxley?
What'd you say?
Sarbanes-Oxley cost that?
Yes, both in the audit fees and also the some of the, you know, diverting your employees. Plus, an average firm would be spending 30,700 man hours. That's according to Financial Executives International. And the sad thing about it is, a lot of these things really aren't that relevant to the financial statement and to shareholders. Like, you know, you have accountants, you know, in defining the term internal control in the act is things like how many letters are in your employee password, who has the office keys. There was one firm that the Economist magazine mentioned that where every check over $100, which was checked off by the accounting firm, and a firm that makes millions of dollars of companies. Nancy Pelosi has, in fact, said that in the House Democrat Innovation Agenda, which she unveiled, that, you know, the Democrats were committed to legislation that, ensuring that Sarbanes-Oxley wasn't, quote, overly burdensome for small public companies.
It was actually the House Democratic Innovation Commission. There is no such thing as a Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party.
I'm sorry.
I know that Newt Gingrich came out with his talking points back in the 70s, and he said, you know, Democrat sounds more like rat, and Democratic sounds more like democracy, and people, we don't like that. But I just feel compelled to correct people, since Howard Dean...
Thank you. We actually put out a press release
not do that.
Praising Nancy Pelosi for that. So.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not here to say that everything about Sarbanes-Oxley is wonderful and defend it, but the main points of Sarbanes-Oxley, I mean, and I mean, just looking at some of, you know, the, for example, the NFIB.com website, the main point is that it criminalizes any form of employer retaliation against whistleblowers. I mean, that's probably 70% of the intent, certainly, of Sarbanes-Oxley, and it punishes employers who punish whistleblowers by up to 10 years in prison. What's wrong with that?
Well, every law provision, I haven't studied those provisions specifically, and certainly we should protect whistleblowers and go after fraud, but every law needs to be looked at. I think the sunsets, say, in the Patriot Act were a good thing, and I think a similar process should take place with Sarbanes-Oxley. Look at the law, what works and what doesn't.
Well, I would disagree with you that probably every law should sunset after 5 years, and we should force our legislators to revisit them, or at least the vast majority of them. That should be the norm, and they should have to have a supermajority for a law not to automatically sunset. But that's a whole other discussion, I think. But handling whistleblower claims, establishing a strict non-retaliation policy. I mean, here's the Sarbanes-Oxley at a glance, okay? And this is 100% of it. Criminalizes any form of employer retaliation against whistleblowers. Applies to both publicly traded and privately owned companies. Previously, privately owned companies hadn't, you know, suffered under this, as it were. Companies like Bechtel Corporation. Punishable by fines of up to 10 years in prison. Broader than any prior regulations. Retaliation complaints are handled by the Occupational Health and Safety Administration. Gives the Department of Labor the right to force companies to reinstate employees who have pending Sarbanes-Oxley-related proceedings. And gives the Security and Exchange Commission the ability to participate in any Sarbanes-related proceedings. Application of small business. Privately owned businesses are typically exempt from most civil provisions regarding whistleblowing. The criminal provisions of Sarbanes-Oxley do apply to privately owned companies, and the law is not retroactive and only applies to employees who are retaliated after Sarbanes was signed into law.
Well, there is one section, actually, that's like about two paragraphs long, section 404, that has been the source of much of the trouble. That is section 404, which says employers must certify internal control and that auditors must sign off on the internal control. That has been interpreted by another problem is this quasi-private entity created, the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, which lacks sort of some accountability mechanisms. They've transformed the firm, attached by auditing firms, into actual full-blown audit of things.
John, I'm sorry to move this along. We only have 60 seconds left. We're talking to John Berlow, CEI.org, Competitive Enterprise Institute. Correct me if I'm wrong. What Sarbanes-Oxley does is it says that the CEO himself can go to jail if the accounts are wrong, whereas before the CEO was kind of above that, and that's why companies are demanding all these things be done. What's wrong with that?
Well, CEOs were not necessarily above that, as the Enron case proved, and the wrong thing is broadening the definition of internal controls. You're doing having companies spend billions of dollars on, and it's hurting small.
But they're doing
companies.
It to protect the CEOs.
I'm sorry. I didn't get that.
They're doing that to protect the CEOs from criminal prosecution. Because
the CEO has to
personally sign off on the balance sheet and say, yes, this is true. I will put my reputation and my own butt on the line for this. And so now the CEOs are saying, okay, we better make sure this is right. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong is that it's broadened it beyond to go for internal controls, and you have auditors looking at things like technology, like it, how many, like an office keys, things that are not really relevant to shareholders and that are a barrier to small public companies.
Interesting. Well, people can read all about it over at CEI.org. John Berlow, fellow in economic policy with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Thanks, John, for being with us.
Tom, thank you so much for having me.
Sure. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's me too. Hope you get my name. Oh, yeah. But what's confusing you is just the nature of my game.
Welcome back on the 666 day. Yes. My feet are freezing over in the chat room, says, just wanted to add something about Tom's discussion about the GOP website and upside-down stars around their symbol. If the upside-down star is the symbol of the goat's head, which in modern religious terms, or at least Catholic religious terms, is viewed as the sign of the devil. We had one caller who said that she learned in a paramedic class, if you see a five-pointed star with the head of the star facing down and the legs of the star facing up, you know, upside down, spray painted on a wall in a place where somebody had been murdered, you knew it was a satanic ritual. She says, and that's the goat's head as opposed to Leonardo da Vinci's man. She says, my feet are freezing, says, Bush was very enthralled about that goat book on 9/11. My pet goat? Conspiracy or coincidence? You be the judge. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind today?
I'm glad to see you're surviving 6606.
Thank you.
I'm
hopefully we'll all make it through the day.
I'm contemplating whether I should even leave the house today, but I guess it's okay.
I'm really not superstitious. I do think it's odd, though, that the GOP has chosen to use the star, the satanic star, rather than the American star as their symbol. I just find that odd.
It doesn't surprise me. There's a guy down in Texas named Tex Mars that thinks the whole conservative woman is phony. They're just a bunch of Satan worshippers. But anyway.
Well, Dick DeVos has spent over $5 million in Michigan, just apparently even advertising on this program, just slamming ads all over the state. I'm curious, what is it working for him in Michigan? Are people starting to buy the Republican line? Or
even his own dad was saying, because he tried to take credit for the work that his dad and Mr. Van Andel did downtown here in Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
And basically his dad said, if you read between the lines, my boy's exaggerating a little, but of course he's not going to go any further than that. It is his kid, you know. And of course his wife, Betsy DeVos, her maiden name was Betsy Prince, and she's the heir to a fortune from her dad, Edgar Prince, that got some kind of business in Holland. So these are rich folks with nothing to do but run for office, you know. But anyway, that wasn't my point, Tom.
Well, I'm just curious, Rick, because I was in Michigan the weekend before last, but I didn't have an opportunity to talk politics with my family, and sometimes I just avoid it. And I'm just curious, what are the polls showing? Is Jennifer Granholm doing okay, or is
no, because Granholm basically isn't even campaigning. She's just running the business of being a governor, you know. But she got to realize that she's in the campaign here with some real big bucks, and yeah, it's worked in that sense because she was something like 15 points ahead at the outset, and now they're pretty much tied. So it has worked.
Yeah, that's and she's a really good governor, and she's a really decent person. I'm just amazed that a Republican could just come in and buy an election like that.
Well, that's all they ever do.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting to something a little more germane here in Grand Rapids, and I discussed it with you earlier, and I just kind of basically want to ask your advice. What we got here in Grand Rapids is supposedly, although it's nonpartisan, all of the commission members, all seven of them, are pretty much known to be Democrats, including the mayor, who's supposed to be a very liberal Democrat. But yet what they're doing is they're privatizing everything. We got a situation here now where the 4th of July fireworks are going to be funded privately, and they're going to charge $5 admission. They've got 6 swimming pools there. They're only going to open 3. And basically everything is being privatized, and the mayor just kind of has a smile on his face and says, yeah, more private dollars, more private dollars. Now, am I wrong in thinking that the city of Grand Rapids is abdicating its responsibilities by not providing the public services that they're supposed to, and they shouldn't be passing the tin cup out to private entities asking for money?
No, you're absolutely right. And here's how it works. And there's nothing, mystical about this. The conservatives want to, A, make money off the common space.
Yes.
They want to own the commons. They don't want us collectively to own the commons. They want to own the commons. They want to profit from it. And B, they don't want to really associate with the riffraff.
Exactly.
They want to make sure that, if there are any commons left, that, it's at the very lowest, the upper middle class hanging out there.
Sure.
And so what they do is they promote the idea of small government, low taxes, to people who very often are not even paying income tax, you know, but realize that they're paying a lot of tax. They just don't realize it's the payroll tax that they're paying or the sales tax and things that the cons don't want to do away with. So they promote this idea of small government, low taxes. So the government, the taxes get cut, government gets starved. Government is getting starved. And so the corporations come along and they say, well, we'll pick up some of this here and there. We'll take care of the commons for you, not to worry.
Sure.
We'll figure out a way to make a profit on it. And what you end up with is the commons working to increase the profits of corporations, because obviously they're not going to do it if there's not something in it for them, number one. And number two, you end up with, you know, yeah, pay to see the fireworks, and it keeps the riffraff out. And so now the very rich elite can go to the fireworks without having to worry about rubbing elbows with common people.
Okay, but the problem is, why is a group of city commissioners, like in Grand Rapids, who are, again, are supposed to be nonpartisan, but everybody knows they're Democrats in name only, or excuse me, you know, if you really know what they are, and there's, in case of the mayor, supposedly a very liberal Democrat, why are they buying into this?
Either they have their backs to the wall and they're trying to make the best of a bad situation, or they are Evan Bayh type Democrats. They are the DLC kind of Democrats. They're the kind of Democrats who really don't believe in the traditional principles of the Democratic Party and of American democracy, but instead have bought into the Republican light version of the Democratic Party.
Democratic leisure class, as Jesse Jackson calls them?
Yeah, DLC. There you go. There you go, yeah, the DLC Democrats, yeah. So, you know,
so what can we do about it as citizens of GR?
I
mean,
well, I would, the same thing that I think citizens of any community can, I would call them. You know, each one of your city commissioners has an office, and call them and register your thoughts with them. Call the mayor's office and register your thoughts with them. If you can get them on the phone and talk to them, show up at the meetings, participate.
I'm doing that.
Okay, well, good on you, Rick. Then get all your friends to do it as well.
Okay.
And feel free to call into this program, and, you know, from time to time, bring the issue up, and we'll discuss it over and over again, and we'll keep mentioning that. In fact, I would, and thank you for the call, Rick. I would encourage any of the people listening to any of the stations that this show is on, if you want to talk about a local issue, feel free to call the program, because we can figure out a way to take that local issue and use it as an example to talk about it in a national context and still highlight what's going on in Sacramento or Seattle or Grand Rapids or Pittsburgh or whatever, wherever it may be. It's 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
One day left.
Well, really, today is the day, actually, in all probability. Tell your senators to oppose repeal of the Paris Hilton tax, or to oppose passage of a cut in Paris Hilton's estate taxes. Yeah, the Paris Hilton tax, also known as the death tax, is part of this whole Bill Frist, you know, hyperbloviating thing that's going on in the Senate right now, along with gay marriage and flag burning, and something that you should let your senators know about. You can call your senators toll-free, 1-800-459-1887 to tell your senators to vote against this. Cindy Asner is with us. Cindy, a well-known activist in California. Cindy, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello.
Great to have you on the line here with us, and great to talk with you again, Cindy. You are with the along with the Peace and Freedom Party.
Or no, I'm Democratic.
Pardon?
I'm a Democrat.
Right, and the Peace and Freedom Party has joined with you, have they not?
Yes, excuse me.
And in filing a lawsuit in California about the Diebold machines.
Yes, indeed.
Tell me about this.
Well, in the Los Angeles County, it has been discovered that we have in the tally room about 18 Dell computers that had, as of May 23rd, the GEMS 2 software in it, and a tally machine that had a GEMS 2 in it also.
Now, for our listeners, the GEMS 2 software is the operating, it's the vote tallying. It's really the collecting them all vote software that Diebold manufactures for that runs on the Windows operating system that for the central tabulators that basically pulls it all together, right?
Yes, and it's essentially, and by the way, this also has the potential for internet connection. Now, in California, this is not certified.
Mm-hmm.
And we discovered that this was in the tally room. We feel that it should not be in the tally room as it is not certified. We've asked the county registrar, Connie McCormick, to remove it. On May 23rd, somebody in her office said that this was the GEMS was in the Dell computers, and 18 of them. And on Friday, they denied it. So you can see there's some problem in this situation.
Yeah, I would say.
Yes. And we've had problems with our county registrar. She has been a salesperson for Diebold. She speaks for them. And her pictures on their, some of their ads, as you can see on Bradlog.
Uh-huh.
And she's also got something that says, a quote on one of their Diebold pamphlets that said, "We look forward to your company's continued outstanding customer service and providing voter information and election management systems in our county of Los Angeles." So and it has been noted that she's gone on vacation with the Diebold salesperson. So we feel that, you know, this machinery should not be in the tally room. It is not certified. There's no reason to be there. We asked in a lawsuit, which was an injunction to get this machinery removed, to be simply removed, I think it's the law says 3 floors away or 500 yards,
mm-hmm.
something of the sort. And we got this injunction, and we took it to the court yesterday. I was the plaintiff. Unfortunately, the judge did not see it that way. The Superior Court judge found that Superior Court Judge David Yaffe, first of all, was upset that our lawsuit was too late. However, it was late because, and I don't consider it late, we asked the county registrar to do this way back in May and did not comply.
Mm.
So we had no choice.
So the county registrar sort of set it up so that your lawsuit happened the day before the election.
Yes. So here we go. The judge did not like he based his dismissal primarily on it being too late. And he also was quite aghast. He said so it could stay there, but we said it was not certified. It was really not legal for it to stay there because of the lack of certification. We brought up voter fraud. He said voter fraud. Fraud. Well, I mean, you can't, aren't you, you know, the essential issue was, can't you trust in our county registrar? Well, we brought up voter fraud. Voter fraud, whoever, you know, essentially as if, you know, there's gambling going on.
Right, like there's no such, yeah, what? What? Here in Casablanca?
<It's>,
incredible, absolutely incredible.
With that, when we brought up, when the lawyer brought up Florida, he said that, well, the Supreme Court stopped that, the count, the recount. So, I mean,
right.
This was appalling.
So the bottom line is that this is not, your lawsuit was not successful in enjoining
absolutely not. We were dismissed out of hand. We wanted to bring up, you know, Mark Christman Miller's book of Fold Again, kinds of, we could have gone on. But the judge was having none of it.
For those people who are curious about the GEMS operating system, Cindy, let me just play a clip here. This is from national television. Howard Dean on filling in as the guest host for Tina Brown on her old program Topic A with Tina Brown with Bev Harris. Here he is.
Bev sat me down, and in a few short seconds, I was amazed at what I could do.
All right, Bev, show me how to do this.
Well, what we have here is the central tabulator computer. Now, in a voting system, you have all these different voting machines at all the different polling places. Sometimes, as in a county like mine, there's 1,000 polling places in one county. All those machines feed into the one machine so it can add up all the votes. So, of course, if you were going to do something you shouldn't to a voting machine, would it be more convenient to do it to the 4,000 machines or to just come in here to one machine and deal with all of them at once? What surprises people is the central tabulator is just a PC. It's like you and I use. It uses Windows. It's just a regular computer.
So anybody who can hack into a PC can hack into the central tabulator.
The GEMS program is the program that is the central tabulator program. and I'm going to put in a password here. Okay, we're in. Now, this is the official program that the county supervisor sees.
Is this the Diebold program?
Yes, this is a Diebold Central Tabulation Program.
Okay.
And then go to Election Summary Report, and it's kind of where it's been for a minute while it adds up all the votes from all the different precincts. And I can see here Howard Dean has 1,000 votes. And Lex Luthor has 500, so you're beating Lex Luthor, and we're...
2-1.
Yes, and Tiger Woods, unfortunately, doesn't have any votes yet.
All right.
All right, let's close this out. I was just showing you a way to go in and look at votes, which, of course, you can't tamper with. Go to the Start menu, and I'm going to show you something tricky. And I want you to go to My Computer and just click that. And you're going to see some... Go to Local Disk C. Go to GEMS, which is the name of the Diebold program. We're going to go to LocalDB, which stands for Local Database. That's where they keep the votes. And by the way, this has been out on the Internet for ages now. Go to Central Tabulator Votes, which is the database we just looked at. And then go to the sum of the candidates, which is that table. You see we have 800 votes here for you and 400 for Lex Luthor. Let's just flip those. We'll make that 400. And we'll give 100 votes to Tiger. Let's just see what happened here. We'll go back into GEMS the legitimate way. You're the county supervisor. You're checking on the progress of your election. And as you can see now, Howard Dean only has 500 votes. Lex Luthor has 900 and Tiger Woods has 100 votes. Hmm. We just edited an election. It took us 90 seconds.
90 seconds, changed an election on national television. Howard Dean hacking a GEMS system on a Diebold machine, Cindy Asner.
Yeah. This is what's appalling. Now, the other big question is, why were these uncertified Dell computers even in this tally room?
Yeah.
No explanation. Why were they even...
So what's the next step? We have about a minute left. What's the next step on this, Cindy Asner?
Well, we don't... At this stage of the game, there seems to be a lot of explaining that needs to be done. What we found yesterday in trying to get the Board of Supervisors in L.A. County... are the overseers for the county registrar, and my big question is, and the question I feel is what I found in this process yesterday is the appalling issue is that the people seem to are expected to have to educate our elected officials.
Yeah.
As we went from place to place, we found that. Basically, everybody said, well, we're relying on our county registrar. They didn't seem to know anything about voter fraud. They hadn't done any research.
Is there, Cindy, a website where people can learn more about what you're doing or help you support your efforts?
I think Bradblog is the best place to go.
Bradblog.com.
.com. Absolutely.
Brad Friedman's blog. Yeah.
I would recommend that, Brad, completely, 100%.
Yeah, he gets it. Also, I'd toss in blackboxvoting.org.
Absolutely.
Deb Harris, yeah.
Deb Harris.
Cindy Asner, activist in California. Cindy, thanks so much for being with us.
And thank you.
And for having the courage to get out there and file that that injunction and you know, get out there and get active. God bless you. 16 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Victoria Jones with us in the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria, question for you.
Yes, sir.
The historically, in like, you know, old religion days, the five-pointed star with the point at the top,
yes,
was viewed as the symbol of, I believe, of winter, and the five-pointed star with the two points at the top and the single point facing down was viewed as the symbol of summer, or the feminine symbol, and the other was the masculine symbol. But when Catholicism came along, and for the last couple thousand years, by and large, the five-pointed star, like on the American flag, with the point at the top, is like, well, you can see it Leonardo da Vinci's symbol of man, you know, where the person is with his hands out and his
legs
out.
You're not going to go all Da Vinci Code on me, are you, Tom?
No, I'm not.
You're not.
But if you've seen that picture, that famous picture of Da Vinci's, you know, there's a five-pointed star around it.
Yes.
You know, and the head is at the top and the two arms on the sides and the legs at the bottom.
Yes.
And you flip it upside down, and the devil worshippers, the Satanists, flip it upside down. And, in fact, they teach this in classes for, like, EMTs and things. If you ever see this, like, painted on a wall where there's been a crime scene, where the two, if you flip the star upside down, the two points up at the top then become the two ears of the goat. The two points at the side become the, obviously, the two top become the horns. The two on the side become the ears of the goat. And the one at the bottom becomes the chin of the goat. And this is the Satan symbol. Okay, you with me so far?
I'm with you.
Okay, so the founders, you know, Betsy Ross and company, they put the star with the pointy, with the head at the top, so it's the sign of man, not the sign of the goat.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. Look
if
at
you're going to have a star at all, which I don't get anyway, but there you go. I'm rolling with you.
Okay. Yeah, okay. If you look at the GOP symbol, the elephant with the three stars on it?
Yes.
The stars are upside down.
Duh.
Now, today is 666. It's June 6, 2006. And so I thought it was an appropriate day to bring this up. And I'm asking everybody I know, do you know how it is that the Republican Party came to adopt what has been adopted by Satan worshippers as their symbol, the upside-down pentagram, as their logo?
I don't know how that came about, but it is interesting how you might have a logo and you might start off not taking much notice of it, but slowly, like the portrait of Dorian Gray, it takes you over.
Right. So it could be. Now, here's the other thing, is that the upside-down pentagram represents the number 6. The right-side-up pentagram represents the number 5. And so an upside-down star, which is the GOP symbol, is a 6, and there's 3 of them on the elephant. That's 666.
Oh, that's even creepier.
Yep.
And they all claim to be Bible thumpers, not Bible bashers.
Yeah, well, here's a set of questions for you to ask Tony Snow.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a good one. Yeah. I'm going to ask this one, I know. Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah. Let me get my pen.
Tony, why has the Republican Party adopted the symbol of Satanism as part of its logo? There you go.
Yeah, I'm making notes.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
So what's happening in Washington, D.C. today? Victoria Jones.
Well, the Senate continues to debate the non-amendment, the amendment that is certainly not to be because they don't have the votes and it's all about let's get the Republican base out in November because otherwise they might just sit on their bottoms. That, of course, is the gay marriage amendment, which has another more fancy name but is nothing more nor less than that. The amendment about which the president spoke yesterday and First Lady was silent because she doesn't agree with him. And even the vice president, who is certainly usually not quiet, was silent because he doesn't agree with him either. So you don't even have the White House in agreement
on this
issue.
You know, I have to think that most of the Republican base at this point is like, hey, isn't there a war going on?
I think they are. I don't think this is going to work this time.
Not only do I think it's not going to work, I think it's going to backfire.
I'm not sure.
Just like Terry Schiavo.
I
think this is going to be just like the Terry Schiavo situation where people are just going to say, enough already, you know, enough already.
I don't think it's going to. If I'm a hardcore Bush supporter and I'm ticked off with him, and it's going to be the difference between me getting out and voting in November or not, this is not going to get me out of my sofa.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is that they're not going to be able to pass this thing, which means it's going to be viewed as a Republican failure since the Republicans control the House and the Senate.
Precisely, and in fact, that is exactly what it is. It will be a Republican failure.
Yeah, although it has, except that it requires a two-thirds majority to pass, so they'll still be able to blame it on the Democrats, I guess.
They can, although there will be Republicans that they can blame it on, too, but then they'll say they're liberal Northeasters.
Right.
They don't count.
Yeah,
they really don't count, and they'll welcome Ben Nelson as one of their own.
The next is Al Miller. So is any real business being conducted in Washington, D.C. right now?
They are starting to debate the estate tax, which some call the death tax and some call the Paris Hilton tax.
Right. But that's not going to get through either, is it?
I don't think it is. And I have to tell you that I find this issue quite confusing because it gets a bit above my pay grade once they start getting into the real specifics of it. I don't think it is going to get through. So this one may also turn out to be rather symbolic. I mean, for a week in which they really could get quite a lot of business done, because there is quite a lot on the docket, it's amazing how little they are going to get done. And even on immigration, which the president is speaking about even as we speak, as he's off on his photo op, nothing seems to be getting done as far as the conference to try and reconcile the two bills.
Amazing. Well, there's 18 ultra-rich families that will save $71.6 billion with a B dollars if the Paris Hilton tax is repealed. On the other hand, there's 40,000 Americans who've written to their senators in the last 2 weeks saying, stand up for America and preserve the estate tax.
Wow.
We'll see. Victoria Jones, talkradionews.com, 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yes, it's that 666 day, the day that we're all celebrating, apparently, the upside-down stars on the Republican logo. The Republicans on the floor of the Senate now celebrating their religion of bigotry and it's just... Don't get me started. 1-866-440-8466. By the way, we have been trying. You know how I like to get people on this program to debate the issues of the day with me. And David Poole, our producer, who is really good at this stuff. I mean, David's been doing this for a while, and he's really good at this stuff, at tracking down conservatives and convincing them that I'm not going to turn them into hamburger, that we're just going to have a decent discussion and getting them on the air. And we've built some good liaisons into the conservative community. And none of these organizations, Competitive Enterprise Institute, Ayn Rand, Heritage Foundation, Cato, none of them have a single person who's willing to come on this program and defend electronic voting machines, privately owned electronic voting machines. We can't find a single politician who's willing to come on this program and defend privately owned electronic voting machines. David just called the Diebold Corporation not 10 minutes ago and talked to their publicity department. They are unwilling to come on this program and defend their own product. So if any of you listening have any ideas where we can get somebody who is willing to defend these things, I mean, I think it's important that we hear the other side. And it's important that we have a discussion of these things. If you can help us get somebody on the program who will defend electronic voting machine, or at least put forward the reason why they think we should have privatized our vote and should continue to, I will certainly reward you with an autographed copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, at the very least. So, and you can just let us know. You can drop into the live chat room and just drop an instant message to David. David Poole is there every day when this program is on the air. And he produces the program, and the folks in our chat room also. Here's a challenge for you: 1-866-440-8466, 440-THOM, our telephone number. Scott in San Diego, California. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. You know, Bush's presidency reminds me a lot of Shakespeare's play Macbeth.
How so?
It was written during the time of James, and James wasn't really a solid king, and he had a lot of dissent, and it was written as a warning. Anyway,
it was also one of the reasons
King Duncan and takes power. So he took illegitimate power. As his reign continues, he becomes increasingly paranoid. He betrays his own cabinet, including the murder of Banquo. Interestingly, Macduff, in Roman Polanski's version of the play, he made a movie of it. Macduff carries a shield with three upside down stars in a field of blue, and red and white vertical stripes below that.
Hmm.
So it's now, interesting.
That's not specified in the play, though. That's just in the movie.
Right, that's just in the movie. I didn't read any of the plays. But it's as Shakespeare had warned us about someone taking illegitimate power, because if you look at Macbeth, it almost chronicles Bush's presidency.
Yeah, and the upside-down star was probably used by Polanski in the movie as the sign of illegitimate power, because the traditional American star, I mean, setting aside the issues of, you know, male, female, right, wrong, all that kind of thing, the traditional American star is the right-side-up star, for lack of a better way to describe it, the point, one point at the top, 2 points at the bottom.
The Wiccan star.
Yeah, exactly.
And one more thing, did you see 60 Minutes on Sunday night?
I did not.
very interesting that they had a man that was the, I think he immigration or something in the Clinton administration. He had gone to Nebraska. They had set an immigration policy like you have suggested on your show. They find employers who are hiring illegal immigrants in the meatpacking industry. Of course, the illegal immigrants left. He said he had tens of thousands of immigrants leaving the state. And the people that had called, and Harry Reasoner, the person interviewing, had asked him what happened, and he said, we were asked to leave. I said, why? Well, we were destroying their economy because we were driving the price of labor higher. And so he no longer believes in that strategy.
Oh, wait a second. Now, let me get this straight. The guy who helped put together...
immigration under Clinton.
For Clinton. He went to Nebraska, and in Nebraska, he started busting employers who were
employers
hiring illegal immigrants.
Employers only were hiring illegal immigrants in the meatpacking industries.
And he was asked to leave the state?
Yes, because all the immigrants left there were no more jobs for them, so they left the state, and they were called in by those people who had asked them to come in, he was asked to leave.
So the employers protested, and so the guy from the Clinton administration was asked to leave the state because he was making labor more expensive in the state.
Expensive and driving meat costs up, and he said he was destroying the economy of Nebraska by doing that, so he no longer believes that that's a solution.
So he actually is opposed now to employer sanctions.
He is now, well, I guess he is. I didn't hear him say that, but he says it didn't work and that he was going to pursue it. I think he drew an incorrect conclusion from his experiment.
He needed to take the next step
and they didn't. Pardon?
It's like we are so addicted to slave labor in this country. I mean, the first 100 years of this country were built on slave labor, then the next 60 years were built on immigrant labor, and then we had segregated labor, and then we had women. I remember in the 70s, in the early 70s, looking in the newspaper, Help Wanted ads, for that matter, placing ads in the paper as an employer, which section do you want it to go in, men wanted or women wanted. We have a long history in this country of having essentially an underclass, of having a cheap labor pool, and we don't want to let go of it, apparently.
Some people think it's an economic necessity, and I grew up in a labor family. My dad was a blue collar bricklayer. My uncles were in construction. My granddad was in construction. I grew up in labor. I like to see it. We reported illegal immigrants on the job. That's what we did.
Yeah, and those jobs are all now no longer labor jobs.
And they're no longer available.
Yeah, well, they're available, but only if you're an illegal alien.
In that respect, yes. As someone that's a family man, I could never work at a job my dad did because it doesn't pay enough anymore.
Yeah, which is a tragedy. That's the story of America. Scott, thank you very much for the call. Good talking to you. Bob in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Bob, what's up? And thanks for listening on WVAA there.
Hey, it's a pleasure to listen up here. When you sit around listening on the phone, you have these flight of ideas things. So I have two suggestions for you. For the last guy, it's not Macbeth. It's more like McDuck, like Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
And as far as the Diebold thing, I mean, I think you should go right to the source and grab Catherine Harris and get her on the show.
If she would come. I mean, that's the problem is there's an election coming in but Catherine Harris, we'll call her. David.
That's
just,
kind of the kind of thing. But
David just made a note. He's going to give her a shout.
My point today was with this marriage constitutional amendment, I don't know the answer to this question, and I know that you will, being a studied individual, but are there any organized religions that actually recognize the bonds of a man and a man or a woman and a woman? And if
at this moment, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Lutheran Church in America has, the United Church of Christ has. There are Jewish denominations that have.
Then the illogical maybe follow-up is, under the current Constitution, where we're banned from, endorsing any sort of one religion, we seem to then, by this amendment proposition, be endorsing some narrow, we'll call it a Southern Baptist, for lack of a better word, version of religion. And, there's probably some question as to whether it's even legal at this point if we had a legitimate Supreme Court.
Yeah, well, yes, and we have also religion. This is the big lie that Bush was promoting yesterday. I remember yesterday hearing this clip of him when he gave his speech, and he said, "Marriage is the corner." As I'm paraphrasing this from memory, but I think it's exactly what he said. Marriage is the cornerstone of modern civilization, or of thousands of years of civilization, and it's not true. Family is the cornerstone of civilization, not marriage.
And it brings out an issue that I've tried to talk to Dean about a couple of times when he goes around saying, marriage and church are sort of synonymous things because it's a church that marries people. Government, as we've done up here, as you know, confers property and legal rights to people through civil union.
Yeah,
so
but there is a problem, Bob. And there is a problem, and that problem is that there are thousands, literally thousands, of federal and state laws which use the word marriage.
Inappropriately.
I agree it's inappropriate, but it's there and it's in the law. And so if we were to say, okay, fine, if you are gay, you have to use the word civil union, and if you're straight, you have to use the word marriage, and it's going to equal the same thing because marriage is from now on going to be a religious term and civil unions is going to be the legal term. And by the way, when straight couples get married, they have to have a civil union because that's the only legal thing that exists now. And if they want to have a marriage, they have to go into a church. Two things will happen. Number one, a million laws would have to be changed. It would cost a fortune. It would be a huge hassle. And number two, you're creating two classes of people. We're back to segregation.
Well, and I agree with you. It is fraught with difficulty, but it just points in my mind, which again, a little bit convoluted, to the point that we have been following sort of the wrong path with language for a long time. And it points again to the fact that, you know, unfortunately, the Republicans seem to be always one step ahead on manipulating the language to a point where it focuses on whatever is positive all of a sudden becomes negative.
Yeah, but their point that that marriage is a religious thing is wrong. Marriage is a civil institution. Marriage is a contract between two people. You actually literally sign a contract. It's a contract the terms of which are defined by and enforced by the state. It's a contract that can only be broken with the permission of the state. It's a contract that gives particular rights to ownership. There are all kinds of rules that have to do with that contract.
And
it's completely different from what happens in a church.
And I agree. Maybe I'm not being articulate enough about this, but it seems like in this move, the whole business is, and I'm going to have to backtrack, get a thought together, but the government does not have the ability to convey marriage. We recognize the church's action.
No, the government does, though. That's my point, that the government has been conveying, because there are people who are not religious at all who get married. People who are atheists who get married. Bob, we're out of time on this segment.
Okay.
I appreciate the call, but you know it's thought provoking stuff, and this is a conversation that's not going to go away. Even as much as we know it's a wedge issue, it's 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up. And welcome back. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by revitalizing democracy in the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you. 50 minutes past the hour. Coming up on 9 minutes before the hour. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number, Steve in Toronto, Canada. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Nice to be on your show.
Best
wishes to our American friends down there.
Thank you.
I wanted to bring you some information as to how elections happen up here. This past year, I had the opportunity to work for Elections Canada during our last federal election, and I saw firsthand from an Elections Canada employee standpoint the intricacies of the election. Yes, it is a paper ballot. It has always been a paper ballot. The papers that individuals mark off actually go to the National Archives Department and are stored for a number of years so that in any situation whatsoever, if anything is questioned, even 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the road, if any particular county or deputy, you know, needs to be recalled or reexamined, those ballots can be pulled out of the National Archives, recounted, rechecked, and it's 100% accountable.
Wow.
I know that you folks down there have had many issues with the electronic version of this. It's something up here we just can't fathom because we're so used to accountability in regards to the election.
Well, you're not used to having corrupt Republican officials.
We have our own issues, which we fight valiantly to work with and against at times, but Steve, when you
vote, you vote on a paper ballot. You mark off, you know,
It is a yellow piece of paper about 5 inches long and 3 inches wide. You literally check off in the box who you want to vote for. It is by party and by individual name, and that goes into the box.
It's highly supervised. Everything is checked, counter-checked at the local...
Now, are these counted by individuals or are they counted by machines?
By individuals.
Okay, and how long does that take?
Oh, it takes an entire evening, a good 12 hours across the country.
And when do you know the results of the election?
Usually 11 o'clock at night, midnight, depending on which time zone you're in.
So you know the result of the election before all the ballots have been counted. Is that because of exit polls?
Well, the government, in the laws of the nation, once the poll closes, say, early in the east, no information is allowed to be released either on media or in any other form until all the polls are closed across the country.
Right.
So even though in the east they'll know who won a particular riding, in the west they will not hear a word because the federal law states that no broadcaster is allowed to say a peep about what was counted until all the polls are closed.
Right. But when all the polls are closed, when the polls in the west close, it's still going to take them 10 or 12 hours to count the vote, and yet you know who won.
Then they start running them up on the computers, the estimates and so forth. But at least people in the west won't hear what's going on in the east voting trend-wise until the polls are closed.
Right, which makes a certain amount of sense. Interesting.
Now, I have a number of American friends that I've known for years because I went to the university in the States. And many of my American friends are really concerned as to the, the decline in the quality of life in your nation and a bit of the paranoia and the upset of what's going on in your country.
Yes.
And believe me, we up here feel for what you guys are going through down there.
Yeah, thank you. I'm curious, Steve, you just had a terrorist group that was caught in a sting operation by the RCMP. And it looks like it's a homegrown group of Muslim Osama bin Laden wannabes. The fact of the matter is there are more Muslims in the North American continent in Toronto than there are anywhere else in North or South America. And there are actually now have been found Muslim terrorists in Canada. I'm wondering if anybody in Canada is worried that George W. Bush is going to try to build a fence across the northern border instead of the southern border, since, to the best of my knowledge, there are no Muslim terrorists in the southern border.
Well, it is something that concerns a lot of us, because I have to admit that we've been a bit soft on this kind of stuff. We've been such a liberal nation, very soft on many issues, very accommodating, and too much so.
Well, you caught these guys.
And this situation is obviously a copycat thing. We see a lot of coverage every night in the news here, and it seems to be individuals that were very much misguided. But there seems at this point to be no direct connection with the sort of the core group of Al Qaeda.
Yeah. Well, I guess my question was more facetious.
The core
will
bring this all out, obviously.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
It seems to be a very isolated incident, but yet it is of concern because we've been pretty accommodating with letting a lot of people come in the country.
Well, here you had some Muslims who created a weapon of mass destruction. Are you concerned that George W. Bush might invade Canada? I mean, that was his basis for invading Iraq.
Well, there's always jokes about that, but I think if the states tried to pull that, the rest of the world would, I believe, come to our defense, as in telling the states to back off, because it would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Bush has done such a great job at damaging your country's reputation internationally. From my perspective, and many others here, you have a real struggle between individuals in the United States that are educated, that have traveled a bit, that actually have a very good sense of where they are in the world and how things should run, versus, I think, a very ignorant group of individuals, a very large group, that really can't look beyond their borders and don't understand a lot of what goes on around the world. And you've got a very tough internal struggle in regards to opinions and so forth. So,
world opinion, I agree. Steve, thank you for taking the time to call. And thank you for listening to the program there in Toronto. And thank you for taking the time to give us a call. Okay, great. Good to hear from you. Thank you very much. It's 56 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be back with your calls and more news. Got to give you an update here on the Paris Hilton tax. It looks like the apocalypse is not happening. What's going on with the stock market? The U.S. talking to Iran, interestingly, and more right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be back.
You have been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our speaking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not from some right-wing think tank. Ray McGovern is with us. He's a 27-year career analyst with the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency. His work there spanned administrations from John F. Kennedy to George Herbert Walker Bush. He's now co-director of the Servant Leadership School, which provides training and other support for those seeking ways to be in relationship with the marginalized poor. Most of his writings appear on TomPaine.com or TruthOut.org. Ray McGovern is most recently, probably most famous in the mainstream media anyway, for having stood up and challenged Don Rumsfeld a few weeks ago. Ray McGovern, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
And thank you for the marvelous work that you're doing, sir, and for the courage that you exhibited standing up to this man who has been so cavalier in taking the lives of others.
It was a pleasure, Tom. I never thought I'd have the opportunity.
Yeah, I can imagine. You have spoken out, apparently. Paul Joseph Watson wrote a piece evidently quoting you, suggesting that you believe that Don Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, perhaps George Bush, that this cabal that is running the United States government right now are setting up irrevocably or irresistibly or whatever the word is for, you know, something going down a hill you can't stop, unstoppably, setting up a war with Iran.
Yes, I have said those kinds of things. I think the rhetorical basis has been set. You know, it's sort of easy to compare the lead-up to the war against Iraq with lead-up now with respect to Iran. I saw them as rhetorically ready, militarily ready, and there is substance to these reports that Don Rumsfeld, without any reference to Congress, has already sent troops into Iran to help the Azeris and the Baluchis and the Kurds and the MEK, the terrorist organization, cause trouble for the Iranian government. So what the most recent diplomatic developments, where Condi Rice has apparently persuaded the president to allow some face-to-face negotiations with the Europeans and Iran, what that will mean, I can't really say, but it reminds me very much of when Colin Powell sort of intervened in the fall of 2002 and said, well, look, let's go to the UN first before we attack Iraq. And that gave them about 3 or 4 months of respite. Of course, it didn't change the result. They just went through the motions, and I suspect that's probably what we have here with the new overture to Iran.
It also provided them with a fig leaf of legitimacy.
Yeah, very thin fig leaf, but at least they could say that they did consult the UN, although went ahead without any reference to the Security Council decisions.
Now, I had Bob Baer on my program a few weeks ago, and he is a former CIA officer. He's written a new novel, and he, on his program, on my program, he said that the novel, even though it was fiction, represents what he believes to be a non-fictional scenario. And that is that Iran is the most dangerous terrorist state in the world, and that because Bush invaded Iraq when he should not have, he has blown his ability to really do something about Iran, but somebody better, and they better do it quick. Is this CIA disinformation? Is this Bob Baer trying to whip something up, or is there something behind that? I mean, what? Tell us about Iran as an actor on the world stage.
Iran, ironically enough, has attacked no one in recent decades. This has to be borne in mind by people. Iraq attacked Iran, and Iran defended itself. But since Khomeini, since the Shah, Iran has never taken the initiative to attack anybody.
But what about the idea that Iran is supporting the idea of a Shia crescent, a Shia overtaking, a Shia overthrow of the Middle East, and that Iran, because they are Persians, they view themselves as racially superior to the Arabs because they're Indo-Europeans, and there's this kind of deep racism ingrained in their culture. And therefore, they represent the group that is most likely going to try and take over the Middle East and run it like their own little fiefdom.
Well, I think, Tom, you really have to look at where the impetus for all this came from. And it came from the United States when it invaded Iraq. We in the U.K., we didn't, or the president probably was oblivious to this, but that was the surest way to give Iran predominant influence in half of Iraq, the southern half. And so far from laying that kind of aggressive action at the doorstep of Tehran, you really have to say it sort of fell into their laps by inadvertence and by gross negligence on the part of the United States.
Ray McGovern, do you think that a nuclear-armed Iran represents a greater or lesser threat to the world than a nuclear-armed India or Pakistan or Israel or North Korea, for that matter?
No, I don't. The controlling factor here, and we ought to get this elephant out of the living room here, the controlling factor is Israel. Israel has, as we all know, 300-some nuclear weapons, and they have a monopoly on nuclear weapons in the Middle East. That is as much a reason why Iran feels it necessary to pursue nuclear weapons as any other factor. And so there's a third solution to this, you know, beyond the U.S. And perhaps Israel attacking Iran, or beyond the U.S. having to tuck tail and say, well, we didn't succeed, Iran went ahead anyway. The third solution is a nuclear-free Middle East.
Israeli disarmament.
Well, Israel would have to participate, but this kind of idea is dismissed immediately as being totally unrealistic. And I suggest that if you look at the alternatives, those are the unrealistic ones. What we need to do is prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, and the only way, the only tidy way that's possible, is to make this a regional-wide arrangement where the Israelis would have to make compromises. Right now, they are hell-bent and determined not to, and it looks like our president believes that Israel is our ally, that he has a defense treaty with Israel, which he does not, and that is, as soon as it suits him, he will move against Iran using Israel, and that's really what he's doing, using the danger, the perceived danger to Israel, as part of his excuse, whereas the real excuse, in my view, is November and the elections and the fact that this president just can't bear to countenance the thought that the Democrats might take over the House and begin impeachment proceedings.
Now, I've been saying for 3 years that the whole war in Iraq, was purely political, 100% purely political, that oil was a nice bonus, that, you know, trying to stabilize the Middle East to the extent that they actually thought they could do that might have been a nice bonus, but that really it was about Bush being seen as a mighty warrior, as a war president, so he could save his party in 2000, the control of the Senate, and he could get himself reelected in 2004. Are you suggesting that this war in Iran is for the same reason?
Yes, the basic reason is imperial throw of weight. You can see it in the documents of the Project for the New American Century, which is the Bible for the folks that devise and implement our Middle East policy. In layman's terms, we are the sole remaining superpower in the world. We would be remiss if we didn't throw the weight around where we can in strategic areas. What's more strategic than the oil-rich Middle East? And so that is the predominant influence. Now, Israel is a close second. And, of course, the permanent military bases that we're even now building in Iraq are meant to engender progress on both those fronts, dominating that area and the oil, and keeping that part of the world safer for Israel. The supreme irony, Tom, as I see it, is that over the longer run, all of this will make that part of the world much less safe for Israel, and I can't really understand why the right-wing Lee Kudniks can't understand that themselves.
Yeah. Ray McGovern, we have just a little less than a minute left. I'm curious, some are suggesting that Hugo Chavez is actually going to be the next guy that Bush is going to go after. We're going to see an assassination attempt or perhaps a war in Venezuela. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there was already a coup attempt. I'm sure if they thought they could do it, they would. I'm not sure that that they're positioned at this point to handle what's going on in the Middle East, upcoming elections, and an attempted coup against a person who would really resist and has the power to resist and make it pretty bloody.
This would create a war on two continents, literally a world war.
It would, yeah. Well, actually, if they go against Iran, people don't think about the geopolitical implications there. You know, when I was analyzing the Sino-Soviet dispute, we thought that Russians and the Chinese would never, ever cooperate with each other. Last year, they had joint military exercises. This would drive them together.
Yeah, and in fact, it seems like it already is. Ray McGovern, 27-year career with the CIA, co-director of the Servant Leadership School now. His writings appear mostly on TomPaine.com and Truthout.org. Ray McGovern, thank you for being
here. Thank you, Tom.
And thank you for the marvelous work you're doing. It's 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind, and he was willing to make a deal.
And his name was Terry Holt.
This young man sewing on the fiddle and playing it hot. And the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet you're going to regret, because I'm the best as ever been." "Johnny, you're awesome, up your bow and play your fiddle hard, because hell's broke loose in Georgia, and the devil deals the cards."
There you go. Welcome back, my friends. Yeah, hell's broke loose in Georgia. I'll tell you, it did in the 2002 election when the entire state voted on voting machines that had no paper trail whatsoever, and Max Cleland in the exit polls got over 50% of the vote. And Saxby Chambliss, when they counted the machines, got over 50% of the vote. Yeah. Saxby Chambliss, the guy who dodged the draft during Vietnam. Max Cleland, who left three limbs in the battlefield of Vietnam. And the big issue in the election, who was more of a pro-military patriot. But Saxby Chambliss, the Republican, even though the day before the elections, the week after the elections, the polls showed he had only about 45% of the vote, somehow the voting machines in Georgia said he had over 50% of the vote. Just amazing, ain't it? And you wonder why the GOP puts the American star upside down on its logo. Katie in Bakersfield, California. Hey, Katie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am just great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I was able to vote today.
In California, good.
Here in Bakersfield. But when I got to my polling station, the paper ballot wasn't available to me. So I had to go down to the county clerk's office to file a paper ballot.
The option that you were given was what, a paperless machine?
Yes.
Wow.
It was the touchscreen voting systems, and they were down in Kern County here in California for close to 3 or 4 hours this morning.
So you basically voted on an absentee ballot?
Basically, yes.
Yeah,
I actually got in a long conversation with the representative from the Board of Elections, mm-hmm. and as it turned out, I knew more about Diebold than he did.
That's not surprising. Most of their source of information is Diebold itself, you know.
Exactly. As it turned out, he hired me on the spot to come and check names off voter rolls this afternoon.
Oh, that's great.
So, I'm going to get a crash course in California voting.
That's great. Congratulations for doing your civic duty. That's marvelous, Katie.
Yeah, it was very surprising, but I was unable to vote this morning, and it took me about 2 hours to do it, and I've done it, and I used a paper ballot.
Great. Well, thank you for calling back and letting us know, and good on you for doing it.
Thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
You too.
Ken in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Yeah, I'm on the
Oregon votes by mail, right? And if they
yes.
vote by mail, there's no exit poll?
That's right.
How do you tell if a election's been flipped?
That's one of the big questions here, and I have some ambivalence, frankly, about vote by mail in Oregon. I just did it for the first time. I moved here a year ago, but this is the first election that I've lived here for, this primary election that we had 2 weeks ago. And, you know, the nice thing is Oregon is one of those states where there are ballot initiatives. And so the ballot can be very, very long and drawn out because you've got basically citizens acting as lawmakers. And there's a couple of guys, in particular one right-wing guy here in the state, who basically makes his living. I mean, he gets money from this sexual hypnotist by the name of Lauren Parks out of state. He lives in Las Vegas. Makes his living writing up right-wing, anti-tax, basically, ballot initiatives. And so it takes some time to study the ballot. It's huge. And being able to sit at home and actually even, you know, look on the web and check out some issues and things like that, it was really nice. And you know, I filled out the ballot and I stuck it in the envelope, and then you put that inside a second envelope, and then you sign the outside of the second envelope. So you're certifying that it was actually me who voted, and then you mail that thing in. Now, I know the Secretary of State here, Bill Bradbury. I don't know him like a friend, but I've met him several times. I've interviewed him on my radio program a half dozen times. The guy there's an absolute consensus, Republicans, Democrats, everybody, that the guy is honest as the day is long and a truly decent human being, and I absolutely agree with that. But the vote is still, once he gets all those paper ballots, they count them, they run them through ESNS and Sequoia machines, optical scan machines. So first of all, there's that problem. And the Secretary of State here, Bill Bradbury, is on record saying he would love to have, in fact, he's suing ESNS right now, he would love to have machines that ran open source software. He's all in favor of that. But the lack of an exit poll concerns me. It really does concern me. And I also liked the old days when you went down to the school and you actually, you know, it was like watching the sausage being made. You know, it wasn't pleasant and fun, but it was a civic thing. And the kids would sit there watching going, wow, isn't that cool? And I just think that there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, well, I actually voted at school.
Yeah.
At a grade school, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And, and there's an exit poll when we come out.
Yeah.
But I'm always concerned that, you know, shady group. And then this first segment you had, and right after the first of the hour.
Yeah.
The guy talked. McCarthy, is that his name?
I don't. Ray McGovern. Yeah.
McGovern. Yeah, boy. What he's talking about, Iran and having people on the ground already goofing off. I tell you what, I'm scared.
Yeah, and I wouldn't put anything past the Bushies. Yeah, it's a tough one, Ken, coming up with a better voting system, and I agree with you. And I do, as I said, I have some concerns about there not being exit polls here in Oregon. Although polling can be a fairly precise science, I still think exit polls are the gold standard. And the only way to do that is to have polling places. I think what we ought to do is go to a weekend voting. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The devil opened up his case and he said, I'll start this show. And fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss. And then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this.
And there you go. It's the devil going down to Georgia. Indeed. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour, 25. Coming up on 25 before Tom Hartman here with you. And time now to take a look at what's going on in Iraq.
I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But then that one to fight or to die. And there are lives in the balance.
This compilation from Reuters, effective as of 8:15 GMT today, Tuesday. Gunman shot dead, Baghdad, Dateline Baghdad. Gunman shot dead, Feoban Abdul Khatim, head of the local council of Baghdad's Western Al-Jihad district. along with an aide and a driver while they were heading to their office. Also Baghdad, a man and his wife were gunned down in the western Furat district. In Bahaba, police found 9 severed heads in the Al-Hadid district in the city of Bahaba. In Baghdad, two civilians were killed and 7 others were wounded when 2 mortars hit a market in central Baghdad. In Baghdad, 3 mortars landed near a hospital in central Baghdad, police sources said. And in Baghdad, a roadside bomb killed 1 woman in Baghdad. 2 people, including a teenage girl, were later killed when police who had sealed off the area opened fire when their car failed to stop despite warnings, witnesses said. This is not working out well. And in the meantime, to really whip the thing up, we've got good old OxyContin Rush over there saying, this Haditha story, whatever it is, folks, this is the final big push on behalf of the Democratic Party, the American left, and the drive-by media to destroy our effort to win the war in Iraq. Somebody needs to tell Rush Limbaugh, there is no war in Iraq. There is an occupation of a country that doesn't want to be occupied. The war is over. We overthrew Saddam. We took that government. We took that country. The war was successful. When Bush declared hostilities over, he was making an accurate declaration.
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
It's true. We did. We beat Saddam's army. We beat the Republican Guard. We knocked them over. We did what our army and our Marines and Army and Air Force, Navy did what they do very well, blowing things up and killing people, breaking things and killing people. And I don't mean that in a negative context. Sometimes you need that. We took Iraq and we won. And then we began an imperial occupation. And that's what's not going so well. And you can't win an occupation. I'm sorry. Well, actually, arguably you can. It just takes generations. And even then, typically, at some point you say, okay, time for us to get out. Like the British did in Uganda. Like the French did in Algeria. You know, eventually you say, enough already. We don't need to be hit like the Belgians did in the Congo. You say, enough. It doesn't work. Like we did after literally 40 years in the Philippines. You do one of two things. You either leave after multiple generations of stabilizing a place and turning it over to its existing government, or you annex it like we did with Hawaii. But, you know, an occupation is a completely different thing from a war. We don't have a war going on in Iraq. We have an occupation. And 4 out of 5 of the attacks directed against us are attacks between Iraqis and among Iraqis, where we happen to be in the middle. Not literally and physically in the middle, but, you know, if we weren't there, they'd be attacking each other. So then the question becomes, well, how do you keep them from attacking each other since we set up this terrible situation? And I think probably Joe Biden's suggestion is the reasonable one, and that is that you have a Sunni Iraq, you have a Shia Iraq, and you have Kurdistan. So we'll see how it shakes out. But just this demagoguery by folks like Limbaugh is just so tragic. This is so tragic. Joe in Anchorage, Alaska, listening on KUDO, where this third hour of the program is live. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program. Joe? No Joe. Okay, let's try Eleanor in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Eleanor, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to find out, you were talking a little while ago with a fellow from Canada regarding how they know the elections up there, the results before, if they don't have exit polls.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is this basic population. Ontario and Quebec are in the east, and they've got the vast majority of the population. And so by the time the polls close out west, they've already counted a lot of the votes out back east. And so
the national elections are pretty much decided at that point.
Yes, that's right. And, well, the other ones, the more local ones, they've been counting the votes and the ballots all day long. So they pretty much know who is leading. A lot of times, there will be times when they're kind of close and it will take longer. But
yeah.
Sometimes it's just...
So they're counting as they're going along.
Pardon me? Yeah.
They're counting. Now, I remember when I was a kid, I remember like, you know, 7, 8 years old, the elementary school that I went to was a polling place, and my dad was real active in the Republican Party. And I remember going down there and when my parents voted, and they had poll watchers at that time from the Republican and Democratic parties. And now, keep in mind, this is an ancient memory, and it may be wrong, but my recollection is that there were the people voting in the booths, and then there were also people who were counting ballots.
Right, and that's basically what they're doing. They've got, they have paid poll workers, and they also have volunteers.
Right.
And volunteers will be spending a lot of their time just counting. They'll take the ballot boxes away, and they'll count. And,
right.
But because they've got the paper, they can count as many times as they need to if there's any question.
Right.
And they do keep them. So it's usually not a big deal. If, I mean, it's not like it happened down here when there's all the questions about the black boxes and that kind of thing.
Right. Interesting. Thank you, Eleanor.
No
good
problem.
Thank you very much. Sean in Sacramento, California. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I noticed you've been kind of talking about sort of end time stuff, the Antichrist, you know, 666.
Well, it's 666 today, you know.
It's a very entertaining topic. I watch a lot of the shows on TBN because they seem to go over it and over it again.
Mm.
And I think it's one reason why it sells so much is that when you're talking about politics, you're essentially talking about building infrastructure, you know, how water flows, where food gets to. It's not as interesting as, you know, the beast rising and, you know, Mark of the Beast and stuff. But anyhow, I was going to mention a point that if a lot of your listeners could listen in occasionally, whether it be the 700 Club, especially like Hal Lindsey's show, you begin to understand that there's no, virtually, I mean, when you talk about like kind of the idea that Hal Lindsey has said it over and over again, he doesn't see America in prophecy.
Right.
Therefore, America must be destroyed.
Yeah,
he doesn't make any move to do that himself, but his belief is that, you know what, it's got to be done way with for prophecy to kind of happen. That I think it's more of a comfort to his listeners that, oh well, you know, the kingdom of heaven will come, you know, once things start lining up for us.
That's
but
interesting.
If you really listen to it, he's said over and over again, because you know, when we hear about the things about our national, you know, the deficit and the economy and all the things that America faces as a country, you know, a lot of their concern is like, well, America's really not part of prophecy.
Yeah.
Therefore,
we don't
have to be concerned with it.
This would explain why the Bush administration has run up an $8,361,593,000,000 debt, which is the equivalent for every family of four in the United States of $111,892.96 per family.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know.
And you don't hear an outcry from a lot of the religious
right. It can't be paid back. I mean, it's just too huge to pay back. At least in one or two generations, it can't be paid back. And so they just figure, well, what the heck? We'll just walk away from it because it's the end of the world. I remember reading The Late Great Planet Earth back in 72 or 73 or 74, whenever it first came out. And I was fascinated by it. I mean, I won't say that I totally went over to that side, but I was just fascinated by the whole idea back in the early 70s. And Hal Lindsey was taken very seriously, actually, in the Christian community at that time. And I believe I didn't realize he was still out there and still preaching. He has a TV show.
Oh, yeah, he has his own show. And
amazing.
If you watch it, you do hear kind of as if America doesn't fit into their equation, therefore it's really none of their concern.
Yeah, fascinating.
There's some extreme groups, like some wealthy guy who's trying to, I think, turn South Carolina into a sovereign Christian nation.
Yes.
And you know, he talks about that, you know, that it would be dictated by biblical law, and they have their own flag and things of that nature, and it's
right. And then there are also communities, entirely Catholic communities, and of course there are entirely Mormon communities. That's not a new idea, frankly. Massachusetts tried that. In fact, Massachusetts almost seceded from the Union in 1801. It was a crisis for Thomas Jefferson because the fundamentalist Protestants wanted to secede. But anyhow, yeah, interesting. Sean, thanks a lot for the call. That's fascinating. I'm going to move along with the phone calls here, but we have to take a break in about 15 seconds, and so I don't want to just get into something without and then have to bail out of it. But this thing about the pentagram is absolutely weird. I've gotten probably 20 emails during the course of this program, and folks talking about it in the chat room, about the why are the stars upside down on the Republican National Committee's elephant, the Republican logo. Why are the stars upside down when they're right side up on the American flag? If anybody knows the answer to that, I would love to hear it. I mean, this is our day. It's our 666 day. Curious stuff. Not our day. It's the day. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, "Devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a... I'm the best there's ever been." He played Found a Mountain, Run, Boys, Run.
Yes. That's what we got to do is drive the devil out. Get rid of those voting machines. Go over to RollingStone.com, read the article by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. about what, you know, what the real devil is up to right now. Let's try Joe in Anchorage, Alaska again. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, here I am.
What's up?
We're hearing you live now due to a program change, and we really enjoy it.
That's great. Thank you.
I listened to you yesterday. You were great.
Thank you.
Today you got better.
Okay.
All right. Our voting machines have totaled in the 2004 election. It's on our page. We're not a big state. We're not a swing state. But the discrepancies are outrageous. I mean, they're showing in almost 20 out of our 40 precincts throughout the state over 100% turnout, over 230% turnout by their own count. These figures we know are impossible. The Democratic Party has been trying to get the actual, not just a spreadsheet, but the actual code, the actual countings, and our lieutenant governor has just refused, and the Division of Elections has refused. I think there's a lawsuit now, hoping to get some answer before November.
Yeah, and in fact, you folks at KUDO, Rich McClure up there, has just put together some great spoof ads about these things. We've played some of them in the past. I was looking around right now. I thought I had one of them here, but I'm not finding it.
What he says is, Diebold, we don't count because you don't count.
Right.
Yeah, Rich created that. He's doing a terrific job up here, and we're glad to have you. I hope we have you sometime all 3 hours live. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you, Joe, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Freeman in San Diego, California. Hey, Freeman.
Hey, Tom. So I'm on delay, so I don't know if you've covered this already, but that 60 Minutes thing where the whole town kind of went in disarray because all the illegal immigrants left the whatever.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I'm going to have to see if I can catch a replay of it or something.
Yeah, I saw it. And the catch with that is that they did something to scare all of the immigrants away. And, of course, that's going to leave things in disarray. You can't do that. It's like you have to slowly start finding the corporations so that they slowly start bringing in more American workers, and then it doesn't make financial sense for them to hire the legal workers. And you just slowly keep raising the fines until that happens. And right. Then you have a gradual,
deportation. Yeah, this is a policy called attrition. And there have been some very good scholarly papers written about how attrition would work. If we simply started fining employers of illegal aliens, illegal aliens would leave the country.
Right.
Or many of them would.
Yeah.
You know,
and
the ones that don't, we can figure out an appropriate way to assimilate them. You know, it's not about racism. It's about maintaining, or culturism or nationalism or anything else. It's about maintaining a ratio between workers and jobs that doesn't wipe out the middle class.
Right. And you don't have to do it in such a way that's just going to slam the economy. It's like you can ease into it.
Yeah, well said. Freeman, thank you very much.
Yep.
Good. I appreciate the call. Jeff in South Hero, Vermont, listening to WVAA in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call today.
Sure. What's up?
It's been a little while. I've been talking about symbology for quite a while. Like, I want to tell you, like, I can't remember the reference, but even the swastika.
The swastika was Buddhist.
Originally, but I think it even goes back to some other things. I mean, I remember reading one thing where the swastika actually meant love.
Yeah, well, it has meant a lot of things throughout history. You can Google it very easily and find, you know, there's swastikas moving left and swastikas moving right that have at various times meant male and female principles or meant the universe or meant earth and versus
spirit. But I think the original, like the symmetrical swastika, because, you know, it all had to do with angles and things like this and mathematics.
Mm. Yeah.
The original one meant love.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
Well, it's they're in Thailand. I have seen Buddhas with swastikas hanging from them. Although I think the arms of the swastika go the opposite direction of the Nazi swastika, and these are Buddhists that predated the Nazis. I mean, Hitler borrowed that symbol.
Well, sure.
Symbols are ancient, and all of these precede Buddhism and Christianity and Judaism and everything else. I mean, you find symbology going way way back.
Sure, sure. I mean, the Germans totally believed in symbols. I mean,
Hitler
was Goebbels.
Hitler was in the Thule Society. I mean, he was initiated into all that stuff. Yeah.
Can I tell you one more story, real quick?
Sure.
About voting?
Yeah.
Just up here in South Hero, Vermont, where I'm from, the last time I voted for president, you had a Canadian caller about an hour ago. Mm-hmm. And we did the same thing. I mean, I went in, I had like a 2-minute wait. I had a little voting booth, and it was a paper ballot. And I think I actually did it in pencil.
Yeah.
And I walked over to a woman, like, stuck it in a wooden box. Very, very simple.
Yeah. In fact, most of the small towns in Vermont still hand count the ballots.
How do they do in Montpelier when you're looking?
In Montpelier, they run them through a Diebold machine, and the company that counts them, that maintains the machine, is actually based out of Massachusetts. I moderated in Montpelier two or three years ago a citizens panel with Deb Markowitz, the Secretary of State of Vermont, on this topic. And I think Deb was a little amazed at how many people, over 100 people showed up on a really cold January night to talk about it.
Yeah, people and, are concerned about it.
Yeah, a lot of concern.
And, even a small place like that, yeah.
Yep, yeah, and this is a town of, 9,000 people, but a lot of people showed up and a lot of people very concerned about it. So, yeah.
All right. Jeff, thanks, Tom.
Thanks a lot
for
the call.
Day.
Good to hear from you. Jay in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Jay, we just have a few seconds left. What's up?
Well, I'm looking at that star, and I'm saying it's not that much of a stretch for it to be the head of a goat. If you take those two bottom points on the left and right and make them tusks, it's really not that much of a stretch for it to be an elephant with two ears, two tusks, and a trunk.
That's if the star, if the top part of the star is at the top. But if you flip that upside down, what is it?
Well, you have that point pointing straight down. That's a trunk. The two points
on
the left
see what
and
you're
right
saying.
Of that are tusks.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a possibility. That's a possibility. We could.
It's all a stretch.
There you go. Jay, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you. Coming up on tomorrow's Tom Hartman program, what's the difference between a liberal and a conservative? I'm just going to lay this stuff out. We'll talk about the history of both. Also in the second hour, Larry Scott from VA Watchdog will be here with us with new information about the VA data heist, why this and why now, that and more, and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman radio program, your radio support group of, by, and for we the people. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.